Good morning. While we're waiting for the slides to come up here, I want to thank you for inviting us out to talk about this exciting project that came across our doorsteps a few years ago. And I'm an old school guy when it comes to condom use and talking about condom use and stuff like that. So you really have to convince me that something works. And this came across my doorstep, and I said, oh, my God, this is a very new way of looking at this, and I was really pleased to see it. It's the Focus on the Future is the name of the project, implementation of a brief evidence-based behavioral intervention for African-American men who have sex with women in STD clinic settings. And one of the things I was worried about is that we were putting something in an STD clinic, and people who are coming to an STD clinic may not want to talk to anybody about anything, but just get in there, get the service, and get out. But I was proved wrong, and I was happily proven wrong. Let's see. And these are just some of the acknowledgments from the CDC, the people who were involved with the project from the CDC, and you'll have our slides, so I won't go through all the names, but we'll look at the bottom down at the original researchers, which is Dr. Richard Crosby from Kentucky and Ralph D. Clemente. And I met Dr. Crosby, and what a pleasant gentleman he was. And he really took me through what he went through to get this project started and what he went through in developing it. Also, once we had the project and we went through all the rigmaroles of getting the pilots down and everything, we piloted it in four different parts of the country in four different STD clinics throughout the states. One being, of course, the Bronx, one in Philadelphia, one in Atlanta, Georgia, and one in Montgomery, Alabama. So what is Focus on the Future? First of all, it's EBI. It's evidence-based. That means it has gone through the process of testing and trying it and figuring out what makes it work, and it's gone through all of the scientific models that could make it work, and it's a sex-positive approach to talking about condoms with young men. And if you look at the third bullet, the African-American males, these were the demographics that they were targeting. They were looking for someone between the ages of 18 and 29 who had newly diagnosed with an STD, who have had sex with women and not knowingly HIV positive, and have to have used a condom at least once in the last 3 months. So what was the impact of this? And this is where it got really exciting when I saw these results. The impact of doing this project, over a third were more or less likely to have a new STD. Another third were more likely to use a condom during sexual intercourse. And over half reduced their sexual partners, which was great to hear. And another over half, there were fewer unprotected acts of sexual acts. And what it also did, it increased the scores of condom proficiency assessments, and also there was a positive effect for the partners of these guys, the female partners of these guys who were coming into the STD clinic. So there was a positive spin on it for both males and females. So what are one of the theories, some of the theories behind this particular project, one being the information, motivation, behavior, skills model, what we call the IMB, but also social learning theory. And social learning theory says that people learn by observing other people and then practicing and then doing it. But in this, we looked at what domains do we have to address to get people to understand what we're asking them to do. And there are three learning domains. There's the cognitive domain, there's the affective domain, and then, of course, there's the behavioral domain. So we have to start with the cognitive and affective information and motivation, because a lot of times where we start is here in behavior. So we bring guys in, we show them how to use a condom, but we don't address their thinking, their feelings about using the condom, or any of the concerns they have about using condoms. So we just jump right into, here's how you use a condom, put it on this model and do it this way, that way. But we don't talk about what are some of the things that guys think about when it comes to using the condoms. So if we put all three together, then we end up with the behavior change that we're looking for. So we address the cognitive through information. We find ways to motivate through information as well, and through some of their practices, and try to address some of the things that were happening with them with condom usage and try to reverse that. And then we ended up with people having a behavior change that we were looking for. So who delivers the alpha wealth? And this is where it got to be really exciting. This guy, he's from Montgomery, Alabama, and that smile on his face, he had that from the day one, from the day he walked in the door, and he was a pleasant person to work with. I was one of the trainers on the project, and this is my buddy Henry. But what we thought was, like I said, I'm an old school guy, but I'm too old now to do this because guys don't listen to me anymore, right? So we got to find somebody who's between 18 and 29. I'm just 30, so so it makes it very difficult for me to talk to them. So we had to find someone between 18 and 29 to do this. And so we looked at African-American males within the community. They didn't have to have any particular educational background, just a willingness to do it. And they had to be between the ages of 21 and 35 from the community that we're looking at, which made it authentic. And also, these guys have the communication skills I don't have anymore. You know, they know how to talk to each other. So they know the language, they know the lingo, they know what to say, what not to say, and I'm not that person anymore. I have grandkids, but I don't talk to them about too much either. One of the other things that made it so powerful an intervention was it was an ILI, an individual-led intervention. It was evidence-based, single session, 45 to 60 minutes. And we found, because a lot of people were skeptical, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, who's going to sit and talk to somebody for an hour about condom use? But we don't talk about just condom use in the mechanical sense. In that hour, we talk about other things concerned with using a condom that are important to guys when they're trying to use condoms. So we had a six-component session, in that section of six components, and the first one is how do we establish that rapport very quickly, because we have to get these guys quickly, because remember now, they're in an STD clinic. So their minds are not on talking about condom use or anything else. Their mind is on, how do I get through this process unscathed and get out of here without too many people seeing me. So we had to teach the guys when they came in for training how to build that rapport very quickly. So one of the things we do is we have the guys to talk to the guys or intersect with the guys the things that are common, like their music, like their clothing, or things that they're interested into. As a matter of fact, when they come into the room, one of the things we suggest was have music playing, some of the music that they like playing, and talk about the things that are common between them. And then we would offer them, or we would issue what we call a SKUs, which is a short condom use error survey. It's about 10 questions, and you can we give them the survey and say, you can fill this out on your own, and now sit here and wait till you finish, or we can do it together. And in here, on that survey, what we're looking for is the guy to tell us, what problems have you had recently or ever in using condoms? Because that's a good place for us to start. Let's start with where you're at, and this condom survey was a way to do that. After we did that, we also talked about how to now you go back and you negotiate condom use with your sexual partner, with your main partners. Because a lot of the problems that people were having was, the young people were having was, how do I now go back and tell my girlfriend that we're going to start using condoms, and we haven't been using condoms? So we had to talk to them about how do you address that? How do you bring up that conversation? And we gave them nice ways to do it, fun ways to do it, and plus we gave them a lot of condoms to do it with. And we gave them, as a matter of fact, when they left there with a lot of condoms and a lot of lubricants, which is something different for a lot of African-American men, is that whole idea of lubrication. Number five, very important topic to discuss. The guys won't bring this up on their own, but we were surprised there were a few guys who did discuss erection loss. But if they didn't bring it up, we gingerly bring it up. And we talk about the fact that it does occur, and nobody admits to it happening. No, man, it never happened to me. I said, well, okay, keep living. It'll happen. All right? But we also talk about what are some of the reasons that it could happen. A lot of times, guys like to say, it's the condom. The condom is the reason I lose my erection. But we will talk about other things like stress, drug use, to timing, the place you're at. I mean, there are so many things that could cause erection loss in men, and not just the use of the condom. And then the number six is a very, very important piece, the fit and feel. When I was coming up, we didn't have fit and feel. We had one condom, and everybody used that same old Trojan, whether it was big, little, or whatever. Everybody tried to use that one old condom. But now the companies have addressed that issue, and we have condoms of all sizes, colors, shapes, textures, flavors, all kinds of different condoms for young men to select from. So that fit and feel piece is another important part of the conversation. But these were, bless you, but these were the six components that we covered in that 60-minute time frame. All right. So replication. Shigatelli was given the task of replicating the research to practice. So we had to develop the training materials, we had to get the packaging done, we had to send out the feelers and the flyers, we had to get everybody on board and do the things we needed to do to get people to come in for 3 days of training. And in a case study, after we piloted this twice. The first one was with the audience to look at the material to make sure the material was sound and it was good. They had to make sure the material would work. The second pilot we did, we actually trained up the peer health advisors. And then, to make it more real, the third pilot was in these four sites that we talked about. We wanted to see now that we trained these young people, what was it like in the real world? So we had the foresight from August 1st through October 31st to pilot this for us, looking at the materials to make sure the materials were sound, making sure that the PHAs, what we call the peer health advisors, making sure that they were doing this to fidelity. Because you know what happens when you send something out in training, people reinvent the wheel. So we wanted to stay on top of that in the early stages of this by going weekly or monthly to these sites and seeing if the PHAs were actually doing this to fidelity, because in order for this to work, it had to be done to fidelity. And believe it or not, they were, and they were loving it. So one activities, we looked at what were the eligible populations, how does it integrate into the patient flow? Because that was one of the things that some clinics may have a concern about. How do I get this now into my flow of my regular clinic? Does it interfere with a process or the process that we're already having? We have to hire the PHAs. We have to get them trained up. So we looked at the activities that would be associated with getting this implemented, and we did that through TA, and we found that it worked very well. So some of the process measures that came out, a collection of process measures, were the number of clients that would be served, how the implementation tools were being utilized, the use and need of adaptation, implementation challenges and strategies, but we also wanted to know, did the material have to be changed or altered any during the process of the pilot? Because we wanted to know that, because before we put this out into, we actually want to make this into a Debbie at some point, we wanted to make sure that the materials were sound, and the only way to do that was to get it through real-world experience. So some of the lessons learned, well, one of the biggest lessons learned is that PHAs, or peer health advisors, could serve on an average of 12 clients per week. That's roughly about 1,200 a year. It can be delivered at multiple points in the clinic. So how did the young men get to the PHAs? We could get them through a doctor referral from the nurse. We could do it from the front desk. Or the PHA, if he felt he could do this, felt comfortable, could go out into the audience as people are sitting there waiting and present the process to them and have them come in to speak with them. The other lessons learned is that staff became more aware of the program, because some of the things were, well, we've been doing condom demonstrations for years, so what's different about this? Well, this is quite different, because in the old school, all you talked about was how to put on a condom. You didn't talk about negotiation. You didn't talk about erection loss. You didn't talk about fit and feel. You didn't talk about lubrication, because one of the concerns that guys have about using condoms is what? I don't feel anything. But once you taught them how to use that lubrication properly, and they actually could feel things. And we also have a nice little demonstration about the types of lubrication you don't use. And it was called the baby oil contest. I mean, the baby oil situation where you put baby oil on a condom. And every time they did it, you should have seen, I wish I had some video so you could have seen some of the reactions of the guys when they saw that condom pop when you put that baby oil on it. And we talked about, you know, the chocolate sauce and all the different things that you guys use to enhance your sexual pleasure. Fine, but if they're all base, you can't use them. But we have this nice one over here called strawberry, lemon, lime, or whatever it is, bubble gum, and these different things, these different kinds of things will do the same thing that you're trying to do with that all-base lubricant that won't work for you. So what do clients say? And this is very interesting. Some clients actually said, and these are actual quotes, "No one has ever shown me how to use a condom before. No one has ever talked to me about using condoms properly before. And this program," this was exciting, "this program makes me want to use condoms." And how do we know that's true? My friend Henry that you saw back there, he had a title of the condom man. And so we had guys showing up at the clinic who didn't have STDs. They just heard about Henry and this condom thing, And they wanted to come in and share in the wealth. But we're not just talking about any condoms. We're talking about high-end condoms, the kind of condoms that guys don't usually see at the grocery stores or at the gas stations or at the drug stores. We're talking about the kinds of condoms that would excite people or excite a guy to come in and want to look at or talk about using condoms. And here you can see some of the costs. I won't go through all of this because you'll have my slides at the end of this if you want to look at this more closely. But this, you can see that this is very cost effective. We're talking roughly about $43,000 a year for a program to address STDs in the African American community. So why focus on the future? Well, first of all, it addresses the need for evidence-based interventions in the African American community. It definitely expands our scope of services, the reasonable cost, it's easy to implement, and it is proven to reduce rates of STD reinfection and promote health equity. So, we are now in the last leg of this. The CDC is now looking at all the material that we've gathered, and they are now going through their processes. But if you are interested in it, this is the gentleman that you will contact. He might have seen it if you've been over to the exhibition hall downstairs, let's just say, to the exhibition hall this week. You see this young man who has the spiel down, and he knows exactly how to answer your question. He's sitting right here if you have any questions for him. Mike, would you stand up so they can see you? This is Mike Epstein. Okay, he's our translation research assistant, and he's our Mr. FOF at the office. He's the guy who had all these packages for everybody and did everything that had to be done to get this thing implemented. So, I will take, at this point, in a few questions. I know I went through this fast with my time limit, but I will take a few questions if you have them.
I don't impose the time limits. I'm really sorry, guys.
No?
That was great. Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
No, please ask a question. No, I don't make the rules.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd just let
y'all
talk forever.
You're a great spokesman for your program. Thank you. I'm just curious how STD reinfection was assessed. Was it from the participants themselves or from the clinic at a larger level?
Was it from the clinic itself?
How did you know people didn't get, how did you?
Oh, the people who went through, they had a randomized, the guys who came into the study, and then they checked back with them in 3 months, and they was able to see that those people didn't come back for repeat STDs.
Self-reported or clinic-based? Self-reported.
And were they contacted? How were they contacted?
I'm just going to know. That was the original study done by Rick Crosby at an STD clinic in Kentucky. Yeah. So we don't necessarily have all the details about how all that original study was done. The focus of this was taking the study material and creating training and implementation material.
Yeah.
The pilot site didn't look to see whether it was reproducible. Those same things are reproducible. The assumption is it'll get the same results if you implement with fidelity. And we have the link to the paper, the original paper.
Let's do one more question and then we'll move on.
I saw Dr. DiClemente's name there. So did you train them in motivational interviewing?
Well, no. Actually, we didn't go into that kind of detail with them, but we use a lot of the theory behind motivational interviewing in working with them in rapport building and how do you talk to people, those kinds of things. But we didn't have a session on motivational interviewing per se.
Yeah, I don't have a question, but I have a comment I would like to submit to the audience. Rusty, would you mind going back to the slide where you showed the theoretical model in this?
Show the what?
The model.
The behavioral model?
Yes. Keep going back.
Come on, guys, 5-5-8. Oh, this one?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I would just like to comment on when we interpret this type of model, when we go from the straight line, from a one-way arrow going from the information to the behavior change, I just want to call attention that in real life, this straight line doesn't necessarily work. So when you look at the relationship, the study that have shown relationship from providing information like knowledge type information leading to behavior change, mm-hmm. that straight line doesn't really, not always true. So I just want to call attention that this relationship is much more complex than that straight line.
Oh, yeah, so yeah, yeah. This was just giving you a basic idea of what how it was set up. But, I mean, yes, we do know that, you know, straight lines very seldom don't work because there's backwards and forwards and movement around. So, yeah, thank you for that comment. We agree with that. Okay, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.